Blog Talk Radio.
Many people regard you as a personification of Ubuntu. What do you understand Ubuntu to be?
In the old days, when we were young, a traveler through a country would stop at a village and he didn't have to ask for food or for water. Once he stops, the people give him food, entertain him. That is one aspect of Ubuntu, but it will have various aspects. Ubuntu does not mean that people should not enrich themselves. The question, therefore, is, are you going to do so in order to enable the community around you to be able to improve? These are the important things in life. And if one can do that, you have done something very important which will be appreciated.
On August the 2nd, 2015, this is the Open Source Report. MA here. It's been an interesting summer for us, jam-packed with a number of events. We have been a bit tardy in these reports, but however, with the invent of Windows 10, it is now time to bring you up to date on the world of open source. What we'll be talking about today is open source versus liberated software, and we want to make the distinction. And when our part is finished here, we'll hear from Dr. Richard Stallman, an interview or a presentation that he gave on Liberate or Free Software. And we want to make clear exactly what is going on here, and we'll have some preliminary comments here as to what is actually at stake here in this particular battle. Let's first get the kernel. We always start with the kernel archive here, where the stable is 4.1.3. I believe we are using, 3.12 on our Slackware edition. I believe that's the latest one we have. We are using the current edition of Slackware. Just last week we installed it. So we are keeping on top of that. But let's frame this from where Windows 10 is, and then we'll go to some more comments. But we'll first start out with a statement issued by the Free Software Foundation in Boston that was on Thursday the 30th. The Free Software Foundation urges everyone to reject Windows 10 and join us in the world of free or liberated software. All proprietary software, Windows 10, puts those that use it under the thumb of its owners. There's no doubt about that. And Windows 10, we'll get to some specifics there that Windows 10 does. And one of the things is software as a service. What is meant by that? Microsoft has changed its business model with the so-called free or liberate principle. It's not really liberate software, that they are extending a free update to people that have Windows 8, 8.1, and Windows 7. But now it's a bit clouded there if these people have so-called legitimate copies, genuine copies, as they call it. Do they have retail copies? Do they have OEM copies? That in itself, in one post I read, the OEM copies would not be on it, which would be most of the copies out there. For example, if you bought a Toshiba computer or a Dell computer loaded with Windows 8 or 7, it would be an OEM from either Dell, Toshiba, or whatever company you bought it from, one of the major OEMs. So that in itself is a bit dodgy. Now, the beta, we actually put that on a notebook and looked at it, and it is there. It runs like 8.1, I believe, is there. It's a dual boot with Slackware, and we only use it when we literally have to. And there are a few programs out that we use for broadcasting. An example, on live stream, their particular program will not run on Linux. It will run only on a Windows system. Now, it would run if we put it in Wine or if we used another type of setup. But we don't use live stream very much anymore, so it is there. We use Audacity to record. Let me finish with the statement here, and we'll go more into Microsoft and what some of the things Microsoft is doing. Again, they're using software as a service, and effectively what that will mean for people that have Android phones, that is Google's free software that you get with your phone. It updates automatically, and this is one of the things with Windows. In the past, with Microsoft's Windows 10, in the past you were able to update if you wish, or you could cut off the updater. Evidently, with Windows 10, you cannot disable the updater. Those updates will fly to you, and depending on what is coming onto your system, and that is a much greater threat than anything you could describe. Also, there is a central depository. We'll get to that in a minute. For passwords, people are using Wi-Fi. It has become a more economically economically advantageous to use Wi-Fi with your mobile service. And the reason for that is there's a cap by most of these operators, Verizon, AT&T, etc., on how much you can use, 1 gig, 2 gigs, etc. So they encourage people to use home Wi-Fi or Wi-Fi at a coffee shop or wherever to supplement this. Well, with Microsoft, a new system, you can incorporate your passwords for all of your friends. You imagine what happens there. If one of those friends get hacked, the whole system gets hacked. I think it's called Wireless Sane or something to that effect. Anyway, we'll get to it in a minute. Let me finish this statement up here. Microsoft uses draconian laws that prevent anyone from popping the hood of Windows and studying the source code that's on the lies. It's because of the world's most widespread computer system is completely outside of the control of its users, which is a factual statement. This puts Microsoft in a dominant position over its customers, and now it's taking it. It takes advantage of to treat them in a product. In fact, Microsoft announced that with Windows 10, it will begin forcing lower-paying users to test less secure updates before giving the higher-paying users the option of whether or not to adopt them. Now, this I did not notice. This we'll get back to it in a minute. The literally caste system, a class system they've come up with. Increasing public scrutiny has forced Microsoft to adjust its advertising to focus on how secure it is and how well it protects privacy. But what does it secure and protect? Certainly not the user, since Windows 10 is non-free software. Users and independent security experts cannot access the source code, and that's very important, so that they are forced to take Microsoft's word that the computers are safe and their data is being used responsibly. And it hardly seems warranted to trust a company that is reported to give NASA Pacific Security tip-offs, well, back doors. It could be used to crack into Windows or computers. Advertising companies are surely licking their chops on Windows 10. A new privacy policy which assesses the privilege to sell anything, to sell almost anyone's information it wants about users, and even creating unique advertising ideas for users to sweeten that deal. By contrast, the free software license, the GNU Linux operating system, is developed by professionals and volunteer community working transparently, freely sharing their work with each other and the world. Users have meaningful influence over the software development process and complete choice over what code they run. This means that the software usually treats them with respect. Even if a free software developer took a page from Microsoft's book and began abusing its users, we've had an abusive developer in one, Linus Torvalds, it would have no way to keep them locked in. When this happens, independent experts copy the source code, remove the offending bits, and help people switch to the new user-respecting version. Because it's fundamentally insecure and scoffs at privacy, Microsoft is an open window into you, because it locks users and independent experts out of the development process. It also locks doors to your computer. Only Microsoft has a key. If you're considering replacing your operating system with Windows 10, we hope you will switch to Linux instead. Join thousands of others by the pledge to try Linux today. The Free Software Foundation maintains a list of endorsed GNU Linux distributions. There are a metropia of resources online started. And if you want to try free software, and if you can't be persuaded to leave Windows quite yet, try these three programs that work on Windows. And there are a lot of programs out there. If you're thinking about buying a new computer, check out the laptops we certify through our Respect Your Freedom program. If you are the type that builds your own computers, use iNode, the community maintain a database of computer components that work with free software. We can't hope to match Microsoft's huge advertising budget, no doubt about it. And if you're on social media, see our comments for user respecting social media, and you can help raise the awareness of Windows abuse and encourage people to switch. In your own words, it helps us jam Microsoft's ridiculous upgrade your world hash mark by including in your posts, encouraging people to steer clear of them. Now, let me just grab a couple of things here. Raise the awareness of free software within your social media, on Reddit, share on various other things. Share on Hackers News there and to follow the free software movement. Let me just jump back here. And programs that work, free software programs that work on Windows, there are a bunch of these. And this is from the Free Software Foundation's GIMP, which I use. I don't use MailClaws, but for the internet here, Blender 3D, we use it. LibreOffice, we use it. Audacity, it's not here. They need to update some of these things. VLC, that is the video land client, we use it. And several others of these that are on here that we use, and our list is growing because the number of programs out there continue to move. And let me go to within it from Wine Still in its early stages. Now, the Code Weavers, hadn't heard of them lately. The company behind Crossover and a leading sponsor of Wine out there. So it is moving on. Wine on Android is also discussed for Wine 1.8. We have not been able to get wine 1.8 on the horizon so far there. But anyway, let's move back to the rest of our report, which these are some items that have been around for a considerable amount of time but needed to be cleared up. And we'll put the Free Software's announcement on our Cranston Software page. And this is from Discovering Open Source World. It's opensource.com. 6 million, six reasons why people with disabilities should use a Linux. Been setting here, customization and modification. No doubt about that. Open source solutions, including Linux-based operating systems, are rare, if ever considered. The problem isn't with the solutions, it is with the reason of lack of information. Lack of information, many problems here. Stability, reliability, durability, compatibility with obsolete or old hardware. No doubt about that. Control, full ownership, assistance from a large international community, and they give fun. Let me just get back here and pick up some things. This had been highlighted here for quite some time, actually, and we'd not gotten around to it, but now we are. Katie's Plaza Mobile News Tool and more, and NPR's News Tool. This was out on the 31st there. Open source news for your reading pleasure. KDE launched its Plasma Mobile. Does the world need another mobile operating system? Well, the fork behind KDE's popular Linux desktop. We use it because it's in a Slackware edition. As recent event, the KDE community announced Plasma Mobile. Plasma Mobile is a free, as free in beta, this would be Libre, user-friendly, privacy-enabled, customized platform for mobile devices. There's a heavy emphasis on security. The platform will be able to run on Android and Linux. Will be able to run, Android and Ubuntu phone applications as well as native Qt. Right now, the mobile Plasma Mobile is just a prototype, but one that runs on the Nexus 5 phone. We don't have a Nexus 5 phone, but anyway. Speedbox promises a secure open source video conferencing with Edward Snowden's revelations about various three or four letter government agencies, that's the NEC. IT Week talk to Alexis Marsh, head of the project with Speedbox, focused on privacy of communications. Marchi, let me get his name. Yeah, Marchi. Anyway, is the new goal, Marchi, that the service will build on top of open source technology. Both open source technology and open are very least well-documented hardware. Speedbox is designed object there is, and also NPR released open source social media tool for newsrooms. One profession that embraces open source is journalism, and open source newsroom has adopted some open source for a number of years now, with a number of excellent data journalism tools being developed and shared there. The NPR in the U.S. is no exception. This week released a set of applications that help create images for use in social media. According to NPR's Brian Boyer, the applications are an easy way for newsroom social media teams to create fashionable social media graphics. And more there, it's on a GitHub. Let's local newsrooms highlight punchy quotes, and we'll start using this for our Boston Red productions. Also, Mozilla launched a new feature testing program. Firefox is a solid piece of software. It has been plagued by more than a few bugs. Mozilla has tried to squash as many of these bugs as it can, but it hasn't always been successful, according to InfoWorld. It's interesting they're using InfoWorld here. Mozilla plans to launch a new testing program next month that will let Firefox users try out potential changes to the browser. Now, the browser, we use the Firefox developers version, which updates regularly. But you do have your choice whether or not to update it. And let's see, what's Capital One? You need a database to monitor its engineering pipeline. But rather than keep it to themselves, Capital One released its own open source. There, the one director, let's see, who is it here? Of Next Generation Infrastructure told eWeek that we know it will be useful to others. And this is another open source project from all of us, Capital One here. And this is in eWeek launches Hygienica open source develop ops dashboard. And Hygienica dashboard at the O'Reilly Open Source Convention. Okay. Uses Hygienica, and I hope I'm pronouncing this right, doing software development to give teams and leaders a snapshot, view of the of progress and health of the development pipeline. This should be an interesting development here within itself. Now, NPR released a set here. We'll do these, and then we'll go on to some other things that have been sitting around here. This is journalism.com. The UK releases open source media tools. The Lunchbox suite of custom applications helps social media teams create and tweak images shared across the network. The helpful folk at NPR released a collection of fully customizable source tools. And get hold of a demonstration version. This is for Windows and Mac on NPR blog, where you can get the same handy guidelines and on GitHub to get the source code, etc. There. Now, I'm not certain. I have to take a quick look here. Lunchbox is a series there, and and something for the Mac people that use Lunchbox and set. We'll have to go back and work with it a little bit later. But journalism.com, we will follow them as soon as we get back. This is a summary of this week in Open Box we're looking at. So we basically covered this part of the niche, and let's on to some other things that. These are things that we have been keeping around for some time. The Linux Foundation, here, let me just see if there's any new updates here that we have not gotten to. 10 job interview questions for Linux systems administrators. The new Apache Big Data and Apache Com Europe here. The Apache project, and we've been around it for a long time, has really developed. But many, many things, Big Data here, many things have occurred under Apache's big umbrella. Apache Big Data sessions, this is at, I think, the Euro conference there. And we'll get this up also with the Linux Foundation. Linux Foundation is very interesting within itself. our take is that it tends to be a little bit too much corporate at times for our particular situation. And we've talked about this before, the influence of corporations on quote-unquote open source, not Libre or free software, but open source. And many of these open source projects are now for-profit projects, they are projects that are seen as for-profit. If you really want to pick some of this information up, we have our Twitter feed, which is the Cranston Saltway Twitter feed, and also our Facebook, where we deposit a variety of information that we get from all sorts of contributors. The Tour Project Library. Now, this is from SC Magazine here, and let's take a quick look at it as we go along here. To establish Tor exit nodes in the library, the Tor and Library Freedom Project have joined a force to establish Tor exit node in libraries in effect to protect internet freedom, the Tor network, and show the public how Tor can be used to protect their digital free expression. Excuse me. Calling libraries our most democratic public space, the Post said that establishing Tor exit relay in libraries would not only be a powerful symbolic gesture, but it would also be a practical way to help Tor network as well. The Post here comments, and let me just get to the blog post from Tor Project. We first introduced you to Library Freedom Project back in September. This is from TOR. And we won the Night News Challenge on Libraries. Since then, we have been working hard at bringing privacy education to libraries across the U.S. With stops in the U.K., Ireland, and virtual training in Canada and Australia. Today, we are excited to announce a new initiative, a collaboration between the Library Freedom Project and the Tor Project. Tor Exit Relay in Libraries. The Tor Project members who have already helped the Library of Freedom. We won't go too much into it, but we'll go to the Library Freedom Project. And this is Tor Exit Relay in Library Freedom Project. Greetings, it has been exceptionally busy few months over here at the Library Freedom Project. We have been conducting privacy training in libraries across the U.S., digital rights and library conferences. We have also started a HTTPS campaign for libraries with Friends of Library Freedom Projects. Today, we announce the start of a new initiative, a collaboration between the Library Freedom Project and our friends at the Tor Project. Tor Project is free and open source software, which is the best protection here. And the Library Freedom Project, we often get emails from libraries across the country. We attend one of our privacy trainings. This is Santa Clara City Library here. Won't go into all these various things. While in San Francisco preparing the digital rights and libraries, sat down with Merida from the Restore the Fourth Library here and so forth and so on. We'll put a link up for this particular situation here. Now, this is, as we close out here, does Windows 10 Sense spell an end of private wireless networks? Now, one of the more controversial features of the new Windows 10 operating system, which recently began the official phased rollout, is the inclusion of Wi-Fi Sense, S-E-N-C-E. previously an obscure feature of Windows Phone. It sends Wi-Fi passwords in encrypted form to all of your contacts automatically without asking you unless you opt out. Opting out, according to a number of security commentators, a task that only the more knowledgeable and competent Windows user is likely to undertake. In the era of bring-your-own-devices, not one the most users will actively seek it out. Credentials will be stored encrypted on Microsoft servers. That's the catch right there. The tech giant assures us will ensure that they never access without authorization. Doomsayers are already predicting the worst. Let's start a count. How many days will pass before someone finds a way to abuse the Windows Wi-Fi sense? No doubt about it. According to Microsoft, Windows Wi-Fi sense on Windows Phone was designed to reduce the amount of mobile data you had to use while out and about by enabling your phone to connect seamlessly to known Wi-Fi spots. Well, there's been a lot of that around. Sharing your login credentials with your friend enables the phone to effectively crowdsource additional access points. From Jason Forsend at Sam's Institute, an instructor who's written and been teaching a 6-day course on Windows security for 15 years, takes a dim view of the latest innovation. Asked about Wi-Fi Sense, he told SC Magazine UK, "I haven't tested it, but I don't intend to use it, and I think most organizations will disable it." And from Shane Buckley, is the CEO at Zeremis, agrees with Forsum, there is a mass security issue and potential deal breaker for IT departments. Enabling Wi-Fi access to a user's contact book is a major security flaw. He said many of us keep the contact information on our competitors, former workers, customers in our book, and these are among the many other constituencies that should not automatically have access to Wi-Fi networks. He predicts it will start the rollout of Windows corporate environment. Companies should seek clarification on the operation and control of features from MS before rolling out the operating system. Ed Zemus suggests that companies used 802.ix offer authentication for corporate access and easy pass on boarding for bringing your own devices. And we'll get into some more of these things. He added Wi-Fi is rapidly becoming a de facto access layer for internet. Customers generally dislike using the captive or portal system as a method of authentication across Wi-Fi networks. Vendors like Extras need to eliminate the captive portals and essentially onboard networks on devices. So this is some of the people here. Mark Jones, another security specialist at ESET, said the integrity of WinSense remains to be tested, and the idea behind it is great for families, I'd agree, and friends, but not so great for the business community. For families, perhaps, and with friends, the only problem there is if one friend were compromised, the whole bunch would go down in glory. It is less secure than having Wi-Fi passwords printed and stuck to the office wall. Well, that is true. If it's stuck to the office wall, the only people that would have access to them are people within the office. Nonetheless, we run out of time. We'll have links to this, and we encourage, of course, conversation. And we're on many platforms, including over at Spreaker. will be up there shortly. And, of course, also at Blog Talk, you can see some of our other programs are there at Blog Talk over the time. And we run a little late on time here, and we want to get in Professor Stallman. Have a good week ahead, and we'll talk to you soon.
First battle in the liberation of cyberspace. Who controls your computer? Is it you, or is it some big company that's really controlling it? Well, what is a computer? A computer is a universal machine. It will do any computation you want it to because you give it a program that says what the computation is that you want. So the computer only knows how to get out an instruction and do it, and get out another instruction and do it. The program has the instructions. It says what to do. So you, by writing the right program, you can make it do anything. Well, almost anything. So who gives the instructions to your computer? You might think it's obeying your instructions when really it's obeying somebody else first and you only as much as that company wants it to, will let it listen to you. With software, there are two possibilities. Either the users control the program or the program controls the users. It's inevitably one or the other. So in order for the users to control the program, they need the four essential freedoms. And that's the definition of free software. Free software respects the user's freedom and community. Now, we often call it Libre, using the French or Spanish word, pronounce it as you like. The point is, that's what we mean. We don't mean it's gratis. We're not talking about price. We're concerned with your freedom. And we sometimes say free/Libre to show that. So freedom zero is the freedom to run the program as you wish for whatever purpose. Freedom one is the freedom to study the source code of the program and change it so it does the computing you want it to do. But what is the source code? Well, every program typically will have two forms. There's the form that you can read and you can understand if you know the programming language. That's the source. That's what programmers write and change. Then there's the executable, which is a bunch of numbers which even a programmer can't figure out. If all you get is the executable, it's a horrible pain in the neck to figure out what it does, and even harder to change it. So to give you the real possibility to study and change it, they've got to give you the source code. That's a requirement. Well, with those two freedoms, each user separately can make a copy and start changing it and make it do what she wants. That's individual control. But what if you're not a programmer? You look at the source code and you don't understand it. Individual control isn't enough. We also need collective control, which means any group of users are free to work together to adapt the program to what they want. Of course, in the group, some of them are programmers. They're the ones who actually write the changes, but they're doing it as part of the group for what the group wants. Of course, the group doesn't have to be everybody. So others can use it some other way. They're all free to do that. So collective control requires two more essential freedoms. Freedom two is the freedom to redistribute exact copies, to make the copies and then give them away or sell them when you wish. And freedom three is similar, but it's for your modified versions. You're free to make copies and then give them or sell them when you wish. So if you do have these freedoms, then it's free software. The users control the program. But if any of those freedoms is missing, then the users don't control the program. Instead, the program controls the users. And the developer controls the program. So that means this program is an instrument of unjust power for its developer over the users. That means the users don't have freedom. That's non-free proprietary software, which we got to get rid of. Well, when you've got proprietary software, what happens? Sometimes the program snoops on the user. Sometimes it tracks the user. Sometimes it restricts the user and stops users from doing what they want to do. You can see that the Blu-ray is your enemy. Sometimes The software remotely deletes books, as Amazon did with 1984. Sometimes the developer compels users to install a harmful upgrade by threatening to take away other functionality if it's not installed, as Sony did. And sometimes they can even forcibly change the software at a distance, as Microsoft can with Windows through the universal backdoor. So sometimes they even sabotage users, as Microsoft does when it tells the NSA about bugs in Windows so it can use them to attack people's computers. Well, what you get is basically, with proprietary software, the owner has power over the users and takes advantage of this power, putting in those various malicious functionalities to hurt the users. Of course, they don't do this because they're sadists. They're doing it just for money, for greed. They have various ways that they can profit from having this power over users, which does not make it even the tiniest bit less evil. But they have no shame about it. They have conferences where they talk about the latest ways they can take advantage of users through the power they have. Basically, proprietary software, which is now from almost all the users of proprietary software, they're using proprietary malware. It's software for suckers. So how do you stop being a victim? Formally, you had to stop using computers, but not anymore. Now you can come join us in the free world that we've built. In 1983, I announced I would develop a completely free software operating system called GNU. In 1992, we had it almost finished, but one piece was missing, the kernel. Linus Torvalds in that year freed his kernel Linux, which filled the last gap and gave us the first complete system you could run on a PC, GNU plus Linux. So, unfortunately, having freedom at one point doesn't guarantee you'll keep it. There are over 1,000 different variants of GNU / Linux. They're called distributions. A few of them are entirely free software. Most of them have non-free software added because they're maintained by people who aren't concerned about freedom. They'd rather add convenience but at the cost of freedom. So you have to check which is a free distro. To keep your freedom sometimes requires a sacrifice, sometimes a big sacrifice, as at Lexington. Sometimes, but in our campaign, they tend to be little sacrifices. Anybody with a little bit of maturity can make these sacrifices. For instance, you want applications, but some of them are non-free. If you want freedom, you got to do without them. So there may be some inconveniences you have to suffer for your freedom's sake. Then many websites send non-free programs written in JavaScript to the user's browser. If you don't want to run non-free programs, you should install Libre.js, which blocks, keeps out non-free JavaScript. And sometimes servers will offer to do your computing. They say, send us all your data, obviously for suckers. Then the server does the computing and sends you back the results. But you're not supposed to think about what's happening because it's a cloud and you don't see what's going on. Well, you should look. It's software as a service as a software substitute, and it takes away control of your computing. So a large fraction of the world's web servers are running GNU / Linux and other free software. But I think the most important computers to put freedom in are your computers, not companies' web servers. They deserve freedom also. But above all, it's people that deserve freedom. So we need to advance. And to do that, we have to cross obstacles. One of them is there are big companies that make a lot of money by having control over users, and they don't want to let us advance. We have to overcome their opposition. Another is that the mainstream media don't talk about free software. They have a term that they use to bury these ethical issues. They say open source instead. Now, it talks about more or less the same programs, but with different ideas. where free software activists say, this is a matter of right and wrong. Users deserve freedom. We demand freedom. The people who say open source, they don't want to say that. So instead they say, let the users change the software and redistribute it, and they'll make the code better. They'll fix some bugs. It may be true, but it's a less important issue. If we want to keep our freedom, we've got to talk about freedom. So say free software, and you're helping us every time. Another obstacle